Hello and welcome to the EPRI Currents. I'm your host, Samantha Gilman, and we're joined by Abhijit Bown, Senior Program Manager of Advanced Generation and Carbon Capture and Storage. Thanks, Abhijit, for joining us today.
My pleasure.
So before we get into the conversation about carbon capture and storage, I want to give you just a quick opportunity to tell us a little bit about what you do at EPRI.
So I manage a program which is called Advanced Generation and Carbon Capture and Storage. It's a diverse program looking at power generation with primarily carbon-based fuels, but we want to make it low CO2 emissions. So there's power cycles which can increase efficiency, and there's also the carbon capture and storage component of it. And so we're a group of engineers and scientists and geologists and geophysicists working in this area.
So today we're going to be talking about carbon capture and storage, also referred to as CCS. And it's one of the pieces that may play a role in meeting our 2050 decarbonization goals. So with that, let's start with the primer. Abhijit, what exactly is carbon capture and storage?
So carbon capture and storage refers to a few things in a combination. The first piece is carbon capture. And what that means is to actually capture or remove carbon dioxide from flue gases. And so when you combust a fossil fuel, there's CO2 produced, which is carbon dioxide. And that is obviously emitted into the atmosphere mostly today. And so we want to try to prevent that emission. So there's a different technologies to essentially separate that CO2 from the rest of the flue gases. And then you typically have to do something with it. There's so much CO2 society produces that there's very little things to do with it except for put it typically underground into suitable geological formations, and that's called storage. And in between the two, you have typically a transportation piece, and that involves pipelines typically, or it could involve some other ways of transporting the CO2. So CCS refers to a combination of capture, and there's often compression of the CO2 into a transport, and then you have to put it underground for storage. And the storage reservoirs have to be the right geology, and so we can talk further about that as well.
So the technology and the process of capturing the carbon, does that happen at the generation site, or is that something that can happen elsewhere?
Typically, at the generation site, it's where it's done, because the concentration of CO2 is highest at the generation site. And the generation site doesn't have to be power. It could also be industrial sources, for instance. There's this other thing which people call direct air capture, which is technically the same thing, except that the gas source is the atmosphere. So you literally are trying to take out CO2 from the atmosphere. And so it is still carbon capture, but it's applied towards the atmosphere. So some people call it direct air capture.
Could that be loosely compared to a tree?
Sure. Yeah. In fact, trees are, you know, very efficient carbon capture devices. The carbon in that case typically becomes biomass of the tree through a process of photosynthesis. And then what happens, though, is that the biomass, if you look at the overall carbon cycle on the planet, that biomass actually eventually goes back into the atmosphere, potentially, if you burn it. Or if you look at it over geological time frames, that thing goes back into the subsurface and becomes fossil fuels over millions of years. So there's a very large carbon balance. The problem is, that, of course, that humans are emitting more CO2 than historically, and so this carbon balance is being upset. And so that's where potentially CCS plays a role.
So you mentioned earlier how to store this carbon that is captured. Can you tell us a little bit more about that aspect?
Sure. The CO2, typically, it's when it's compressed and transported, it's turned into what's called a supercritical fluid. And that's kind of a very dense fluid. And that is injected in a suitable geological formation, typically around maybe 2 to 3 kilometers deep at least. The formations require porosity. You have to be able to flow the CO2 into the pores of the subsurface. It also requires typically a cap rock, which is impermeable. And it's also going to have porosity as well so that it flows easily. So you have to have porosity, permeability, and the right depth and cap rocks and everything else for it to become a suitable site for CO2 storage. And then over geological timeframes, the CO2 undergoes different reactions, but it's essentially permanently stored in the subsurface.
Now that we better understand what CCS is, can you tell us a bit about current deployment and how much this technology is actually being used now?
So CCS actually has been applied for many, many decades, not in the power industry as much as natural gas processing. So natural gas out of the ground has different gases in it. Some of it are what's called acid gases, which are CO2 and H2S. And those are typically removed using similar processes, what we're going to be hopefully doing for power. And when you do that, it's the same thing. You remove CO2 from that natural gas, and then you transport it. And typically, you do inject it into the ground to maintain reservoir pressure. In some cases, people will vent. So that's one large application, and that's been going on since the 60s and 70s. And some of them are quite large. Some of the largest CCS deployments are there.
So you said other industries have been using this technology for some time, but what about the power industry?
Sure. The power industry has deployed at least two, and there's a third one coming online. The first one was deployed in Canada in a coal-fired power plant. And then that was about 120 megawatt slipstream at a SAS power facility. The CO2 there was captured, compressed, and transported to about 70, 80 miles to an oil reservoir where the CO2 was injected into the reservoir to extract more oil, and that helps pay for some of the capture costs. And then the second deployment was actually in the U.S. in Texas at NRG and outside of Houston. And that one was a little bit bigger. It was about 240 megawatts, again, out of the coal plant. And it's the same kind of idea. You take the CO2, compress it, transport it, and send it to an enhanced oil reservoir where you can get the CO2 out. During the pandemic, the oil prices had dropped quite a bit. So the one in Texas had shut down for a while, but now it's come back online for about since late last year. And there's a third one in China, which is coming on now.
So given that there are only a few deployments of CCS currently in the power industry, what are the drivers that can trigger deployment at scale for CCS?
Sure. So CCS is really an environmental technology at the scale for power. For some industries, the ones I mentioned earlier, there is a reason, economic reason, to take out CO2 from the fuel. For power, though, since typically CO2 is emitted into the atmosphere, the drivers really have to be either regulatory, or it's got to be some kind of subsidy or some other regulatory or driver to make it work economically.
So we talk at EPRI a lot about sort of the path to the administration's 2050 decarbonization goals. And we've done extensive modeling on the different paths to get us to those 2050 goals. And a lot of those include CCS. So I'd love to hear a little bit about, you know, what role can CCS potentially play in meeting that 2050 decarbonization goal?
So EPRI and others have done a lot of work on integrated assessment models, which look at all kinds of technologies and cost pathways to meet certain decarbonization targets, like the 2050 one. And typically what happens is that CCS plays a role in terms of reducing cost overall. So it becomes very difficult to get to net zero or zero decarbonization without CCS at a low cost. So it is a portion for achieving net zero. And it's not just for the U.S., it's actually worldwide. The IPCC and other organizations have published lots of reports on this topic. So pretty much CCS, again, to achieve the lowest cost decarbonization will be needed. And without CCS, actually, the cost can actually increase substantially for decarbonization.
So what is EPRI currently doing to support and advance CCS?
So EPRI actually has been involved for many years. I've been at EPRI for about 17 years. EPRI itself as an institute has been doing much longer work for close to twice as long. And so it is a very rich history of doing CCS work here. So that work involves very fundamental work to looking at new ways to separate CO2. Also to look at experimental academic national lab work, collaborations with them. We also do a lot of techno-economic studies, looking at a lot of new technologies. Over the years, we probably have looked at well over 150 CO2 capture technologies. And then they go increasing in size. They go from lab scale to bench scale to pilot testing. More recently, we've been doing a lot of full-scale design studies, deployment at a particular site. And then, of course, there's a transport and storage component, and there's a lot of work there, and that includes looking at characterizing sites, looking at pipeline networks, potentially from sources to sinks, and so on.
Abhijit, thank you so much for joining today. I was a bit of a novice coming into this interview on CCS, and I feel like I learned a lot. I think you shared a lot of great information for our listeners about what CCS is, what the current status of it, and where it can go. But is there anything else you want to leave with our listeners as we finish it up our conversation?
Sure. The U.S. government has announced several projects and funding as well for full-scale deployment for power and other industries. So there's a lot more attention on getting CCS deployed in the U.S., and that's also true in different parts of the world as well. So EPRI and a number of other organizations are working very hard to see those deployments come through, but it's going to take some time because we only have tubes, so we need to look at additional deployments potentially to understand the cost and benefit for these technologies.
Great. And that's a good point. There are a lot of pieces to the puzzle, tools in our toolkit to get to 2050, and CCS is one of those. So I appreciate the added context and information. Thanks to our listeners for joining today. I hope you enjoyed the conversation. As always, you can listen to the EPRI Current at EPRICurrent.com or on wherever you get your podcasts. And we will talk to you next time.
If you like today's show, we invite you to subscribe to our podcast. And feel free to share the podcast with your colleagues and friends. For more information about EPRI, please visit our website at www.epri.com. And don't forget to follow us on LinkedIn and Twitter at EPRI News. Together, we are shaping the future of energy.